I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A, and we are delighted to welcome back to our studios, Haley.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Good to be back.
It is wonderful to have you here, and you are playing tonight at Glensheen, and it is a fundraiser for the Minnesota Music Coalition, and it sounds like a really lovely evening. So if people kind of dropped the ball on Valentine's Day yesterday, they could make up for it tonight, right?
Yes, and you can also get 50% off of your chocolates at Walgreens, too.
That's a good tip. Yep. Yeah. the show starts, doors open at 7, starts at 7:30. Tegalexi is opening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you will be on to wind up the evening. Wonderful. Well, you have a new album out called Pleasureland, which is a little different from what you've done before because it's all instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to talk to you about that. But first, and because of the nature of the album, it's a little difficult. You did a lot of it on piano, so you brought your guitar with you today. So
we couldn't fit the grand piano through the hall here.
We did once steal a piano out of one of the practice rooms for I think it was Southwire.
Ah.
And we wheeled it in through this door.
Man,
and brought it in here.
I should have put you guys to work.
But, you know, we're afraid to do that too many. If anybody asks, we did not do that. We put it back. Everything was good. But you're going to play some other songs, a couple of other songs live. But then we're going to play some Pleasureland because I definitely think people need to hear these tracks in the context of the interview for sure. What do you want to play? On the guitar.
I will play Kismet Kill from my record Impossible Dream. I lick the salt and toss my hair. Don't I remind you of somebody somewhere subtle? Don't waste your time. If you wanna catch me, you're no friend of mine. You ain't no Romeo, not my best rodeo. Now we're the kids who got kids at parties. Impossible when I was beautiful. Now cartoon tattoos don't seem so funny. I got a death wish by my side, so don't you wanna take me for a ride? We can leave together, sleep in of a firecracker.
That's Haley live from Studio A and Kismet Kill. And that album came out, Impossible Dream came out in 2016, I think.
Yes.
And that came out before the election. And then the election happened and everything changed for you, I think, in some ways, it seems like.
Everything changed for everybody.
It was such a strange time. And here in Duluth, The day after the election, I don't know. Have you heard of the Feminist Action Collective? A group of women immediately the day after the election that were still reeling and said, we have to do something. And they formed a feminist group that mm-hmm. has been going strong ever since. So, so I think it was a very common reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how, well, I'm sure you do remember, I don't know if you want to revisit how you felt the day after the election.
Everybody, it's kind of like, you know, everyone remembers where they were and what they were doing on 9/11, and everyone remembers where they were and what they were doing on the election of 2016. It just was that powerful. And regardless of what your political stance is, a great deal of change was, I mean, that was just the start of something that had been kind of roiling under the surface for a long time. And now, and it came out, and everything, you know, everything has to come crashing down sometimes for rebirth. And, you know, ultimately it's, I think, for the better, but for the betterment of everybody. That, you know, unfortunately there's a lot of, you know, terrible things that have occurred in the last couple of years, but, people are, I think, really waking up to what's going on and what has been going on, and, kind of recognizing the personal growth that we need to make individually, you know, to create a better society.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Some, you know, marginalized groups were saying,
it's about time.
Yeah. And those of us that, you know, maybe are a little more clueless, I speak for myself. It was a shock, but to many people mm-hmm. it was like, no, we see this all the time. Mm-hmm. You're just finally, it's finally yeah. coming to the surface.
Yeah.
And one way that you dealt with it was through your music, and, mm-hmm. and it's one of the ways this album came about. You want to tell me a little bit more about that? And
yeah, I just, you know, I really just didn't know what to say. I've been writing songs with lyrics, you know, since I was a very young teenager, and I feel like I'm pretty good at it at this point. It's kind of, you know, old hat for me in a way. And it's a really great vehicle for kind of creating a story. But to me, I wasn't connecting with anything. It just felt like, well, what am I going to say right now? Like, am I going to sing a love song, sing about my sad white lady problems? I'm not. Like, nothing felt real and honest to me personally. And also I was just really bummed out, and I needed to put that anger and that grief into something new. And I, you know, just basically holed up in my room and, you know, hammered away on my piano for hours and hours every day. And it's kind of made this decision. I was going to get good at it again and kind of create a routine for myself, because I don't usually do that. I don't have a regimen for practicing. You know, it's like I don't really play that much. I practice before shows, but like honestly, that's not my MO on a day-to-day basis. I'd much rather be like cleaning my floor and, you know, doing dishes, like hanging out with my friends and my kid. But with this music, it was really intentional, and it was very intense and intensive training for myself, and that I needed that at the time. It was very therapeutic. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that aspect of it, of just the actual musicality of it. Mm-hmm. I know that you were, before this happened, you were doing some non-musical writing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you were ever kind of disciplined about and said, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make myself write? Was that something that you did, or did that kind of work like the music, where you would work on it as it came, or
With other instrumental tracks? Do you mean?
I mean, you were doing some non-musical things, writing, and you were sharing poems and stories.
Uh-huh.
I think the last time mm-hmm. I saw you play, it was a couple of years ago, and you were sharing some of that before your show. Mm-hmm. So it was something that you were doing aside from the music.
Uh-huh.
So I'm curious about your process with that. Was mm-hmm. that something, you say that, you know, with music, it wasn't something that you kind of were disciplined about, and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Were you like that with writing? I'm just curious.
Not really. And that probably shows, for good and for bad. I like, my favorite writers are pretty raw, and I don't like a lot of fancy frilly language. I just want to feel it. And so when I was writing those stories, yeah, it would often just be like, I have an idea, I'm going to, like, you know, blurt it out on, you know, work on something for a few hours or like a day. And then whether I read it or would do anything was kind of like, that was like the afterthought. It was just like, I'm going to do this project. I have an idea. I need to do it. And that's kind of how I came about with the videos too, because that was another thing. I was like, I don't know how to do this, and maybe that's good. And so I'm going to just teach myself in this crappy program that I have how to edit things. And, you know, I became obsessive about it. And I was like, oh, this is really good for my brain. Editing videos is, it works for me. It's my brain likes it. And it's a good way to kind of have a different kind of focus. So, yeah, I'm open to all of it. I just, it doesn't matter what it is. I just want, I always want to have creativity in some way, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's like cutting up my clothes to make a cool outfit or working on a video or writing or, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, it's all the same. It's the same source. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
And you're talking about the videos. So because this was an instrumental album, mm-hmm. There are videos that go along with everything, some of which you made yourself. And mm-hmm. if people go to your website, which is mysocalledhaley.com, right? Mm-hmm. It's right there on the homepage. You can listen to the music and see the videos at the same time. Some of them you did, and then some of them you farmed out to other people mm-hmm. and just said, hey, go nuts. Pick a song and go mm-hmm. nuts, right? How did
yes.
that go?
I think it was great. Alan Killian Moore, who lives here in Duluth, did the video for Double Duchess, and it's amazing. And I feel like, yes, I farmed it out. I said, hey, you, I love you. You're great. Do whatever the heck you want. I have no say. It's 100% your creative control. That's the payoff for not getting paid, because none of us are making any money. So, you know, do what you want. And I had no idea what Alan was working on. And then he sent me the video, and I thought, well, this is pretty perfect, because I love Duluth, and I've never had Duluth in a video before. You know, the visual aspect of it hasn't ever been involved in my art. So I thought that was really cool. And I, you know, like Nicole Brending's video for Infinite Pleasure 1 and 2 was just amazing. And it's just the coolest feeling to, you know, kind of say, here's our collaboration. Here's my side. You show me yours, and then it's done. And you kind of don't know what you're getting. And you're like, well, and I just happened to pick the right people, because I loved everything I got back. So,
well, I suppose if there are people that you had an affinity for already,
yes.
they get you and you get them, and it kind of just works out.
Yeah.
Well, so you were talking about the process for working on these songs. And so there's the basis of, you know, piano or whatever. There's some guitar on some of this as well, electric guitar. But there's so many things going on. And it's funny, because as I'm a music director, and so I have music, I'm bombarded with music at all times, and I very rarely have time to go and listen to something like I did when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I would just get obsessed with something and just listen to it. And mm-hmm. so I feel like I kind of, you know, said, all right, this is something that requires deep listening. And so mm-hmm. I sat down and was listening to it, and it really rewards you. There's so many things going on. So you started with the basic parts, and I know you did demos. Did you do demos for all of them?
Yeah, I did, you know, essentially 80% of it was done. I wrote the string sections and a lot of the guitar stuff, demoed it. I just decided to have people that were, you know, more adept to those instruments actually perform them in the studio. But and then Steve Garrington came in and added bass and things like that. But it was definitely, yeah, like this is, it was a conception for me. It was like, this is, I want to make a record. I want it to be like this. I need it to require patience. I needed that, you know, and I feel like with anything that an artist makes, essentially you're what do you want to make something you want to listen to. And I needed that. I needed space. And I feel like that's the production on that really does, like, it, you know, like you said, it's rewarding, but it's very, pretty simple. Like, there's not a whole lot of stuff going on. But it creates this space for your mind to
a mood
imagine.
Well, we're going to hear a tune, and I picked Pig Latin. That's one that I liked. There's some saxophone on that, I think. And Mike Lewis, is that who plays that one?
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the people that are on the album. You said Steve Garrington of Low is on there. But let's hear that tune first. This is Pig Latin from Haley's Pleasure Land album. That is Pig Latin from Haley's latest album, Pleasure Land. And we were talking off the air. I was wondering, the album is very short. It's like 27 minutes long, and mm-hmm. that some of the pieces are very short. And mm-hmm. you were telling me that's intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So as much as I like, you know, space and you know, whatever, room for imagination, I'm also very impatient. I love classical music for 2 minutes. My favorite classical pieces are two to three minutes long. I don't want to hear anything that's longer than that. For me personally, it's like I just, you know, call it ADD or call it the, you know, what happens when everyone has everything instantaneously. So I think, you know, that instant gratification is definitely like something that I worked against and something that I included, because I thought, you know, I can't do an instrumental record that's as long as a soundtrack. I want it to be something you can listen to that's accessible because it isn't like a huge time commitment. So yeah, that's definitely, definitely intentional on my part.
And then I was wondering, so does that mean that you were able to like incorporate it into your shows? Like, because mm-hmm. at that length, you could just do the whole thing. And you said you have tried that.
Yeah.
Or done that.
Yeah. When we toured over in the UK, we opened the shows with Pleasure Land. And, we, you know, it wasn't like we got out there and explained everything. In fact, we had like a canned audience like cheering. That would open up the show. So people would clap. I went on stage, and then as they stopped clapping, then I played the clap track of everyone cheering. And then we went into Credit Forever Part One, which is just this like wild, like arpeggiated Juno sound. So, people were just like, what the heck is this? And that's what I wanted. And then by the time we got to the songs where I'm singing and where people recognize them, it was like they kind of were holding their breath the whole time because they were like, what is this? I don't know what to think. And then, oh, okay, she's playing Kismiko. Okay. But then I think it worked because then people were like, oh, so you don't just do this one thing. You do this. And actually, like in the context of the other things you do, that's really cool, and that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely interesting, to say the least, to watch people's faces. And sometimes it was very uncomfortable getting that energy back on stage when people were mad. They were like, this is BS. I want to hear, you know, all the hits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but only one time somebody stormed out.
could you see them?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
They made a very, very audible groaning sound and left, and then it was right before I started singing.
That's
so
funny.
Like, ah, joke's on you, buddy. But you know, it is what it is. I mean, people ran screaming from the theater when Rite of Spring was first played. You know, it's just something, and I'm not comparing myself, but I'm saying, like, you, when you do something that's different and bold, like, you can't do it half-ass. Can I say that on the radio?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
But, you know, you just got to do it. Mm-hmm. You're like, here it is. This is it. I stand by it. And
there are so many examples through history of musicians that have, mm-hmm. have given their audience something that they weren't expecting. And some people weren't happy at first because they just, well, this is what you do. Bob Dylan's always supposed to play acoustic. And but they got over it, and the rest is history. So
yeah.
If you don't take artistic chances, you know, it's just the same old, same old.
Yeah, that's boring.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be very boring as an artist to just kind of do the same thing. So tell me about some of the people other people that contributed to the album.
My longtime collaborator, Jeremy Ilvesacker, played guitar. And, you know, he and I have played together for 10 years, and we play in Grandma's Boyfriend together as well. And so, he, you know, it's a very easy, natural person to call and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. He's great at instrumental music and making something that is meaningful without taking up a lot of room. And then Steve from Low played bass on, I think, like three or four of the tracks. And then I had two of the Laurels from the Laurel String Quartet play the strings, and Mike Lewis played the saxophone. And he actually, that take was the first one that we did. So I basically like went to a Happy Apple show, got really inspired, came home and wrote Pig Latin, was specifically with him in mind to play that melody. And then he listened to it a couple of times and then came over to my house and we recorded it, and that was that.
Nice. So. And you did a lot of this at your house. Yeah. Tell me about that.
My piano is the best. I like it, and I was so used to it, and I didn't really want another sound. So I just thought, well, let's set up a bunch of mics in my house. My room sounds cool. It's big. Big space with a lot of, you know, wood floors and brick and whatnot. So, we set up like 11 microphones around and got like different sounds and, you know, kind of combined the hallway and the room sounds and the up close, you know, it felt right to do that. And then, after I recorded all of that, of course, like I wrote another song called Double Duchess, and I was like, well, I'm not going to get my friend Zach to come all the way over and set up his entire studio in my room again. So I actually recorded the first version of it at Sacred Heart. Last Valentine's Day was after, the day after, Eric Swanson let me come in there, and I think I did 60 takes in a row, and I ended up not keeping any of them, and then went down to Pachyderm and recorded that, the take that's on the record.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that's that. That's the personnel.
So another one I'm going to play is Credit Forever Part 2. Anything you want to say about this one?
This is like probably my favorite song on the record. It's my favorite one to play. And I also am, I really, really love the video that I made for this. I'm pretty proud of it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Credit Forever Part 2 from Haley's Pleasureland album. That was Credit Forever Part 2 from Haley's Pleasureland album. And, yeah, I found myself just, like, intensely listening there, too. It's so wonderful to do that. You know, I don't think I'm alone, even though part of the reason that I don't listen to things as intently as I used to is because of my job. But I think everything in our lives is so fragmented and moving so quickly. I wonder if other people have that, too, where they just don't get into things as deeply as perhaps they did in the past. How does it work for you?
I definitely, it's been a while since I've really liked an entire album. And I think that's just, you know, the way that it is. You know, people release singles now, and that people just don't have time. There's so much music, and it's all available, and that's great. But like, how do you listen to everything? You just can't.
Mm-hmm.
So when something hits you at the right time and the right way, you're like, all right, I'm going to listen to this. And for me, it's obsessively, you know, one or two songs at a time for probably way too long. And then I'm like, you know, oh, what's new here from, like, you know, 2011? I'm like, I heard this new track. I know it's because I've been listening to the same thing. But I don't know. I feel like that no one likes music the same way that they do when they're a teenager, because you're not pumped full of hormones, and you know, you're just like, that's when you first hear everything. Because it is new, and as you get older, you don't just have more information, and
you have more time usually when you're a teenager.
Yes,
you don't have as many responsibilities.
Sulking in your room, jamming to Nirvana, having a good cry.
So 2 years on from the election, there's stuff happening every day. I believe we're under a state of emergency right now.
Oh, really?
So how has this process of doing the album, has that helped you kind of move forward a little bit? How are you feeling about things these days?
Let's just say we don't have enough time, but...
And we can't say
how
profanity on the radio.
How do I feel about things? How I feel about things is that I don't read the news right now because I want to maintain a modicum of sanity. I have been... I kind of oscillate like everybody between, you know, being involved and being upset and angry and sad and feeling like, oh, what can I do? What can I do to help people? What can I do to like be a better person? And then just being like, you know what? I'm good. I have so many things to be grateful for in my life, and I need to just invest in that and invest in my own joy and being good to the people that I do know and trying to be charitable to people that I don't. And, you know, we're all just trying our best, and you just can't dedicate all your time to, you know, the world's problems. It's just not realistic. And, you know, you can do that with compassion. You can remove yourself and put distance with compassion. That being said, I definitely like try to watch Colbert's monologue when I'm eating my cereal in the morning. That's essentially all I can do, because I just, you know, there was too many, like the whole year of 2016, it was like I was on my phone and it drove me mad. Like I was just batty. I was so like beside myself, and I think everybody kind of felt like frazzled and out of control. And that's just, you know, that's the way that, you know, they as a like media and everything like want you to feel that way. And they want you to just like feel this like panic. And yeah, there are things to be panicking about to some degree, but really like, you know, just like chill and look around you and be thankful and, you know, don't worry, because like you just have to put one foot in front of the other and try not to be a jerk and recognize that, yeah, we're all flawed and we're all just trying to do a thing every day.
One thing that I forgot to mention, so one thing that's happened since you were last here is you changed the name that you, your name, you changed your legal name and you changed your performing name and you did that on International Women's Day.
Yes.
And do you is that something that sprang out of kind of what was going on in the world at the time, or do you think that would have happened anyway?
You know, it just, it, that was a combination of a lot of things. You know, it was a personal decision, first and foremost.
And you explained it at the time on social media and, you know, you're a pretty open person on social media, I think, a lot of the time.
I am. And I definitely, you know, am trying to, disassemble the patriarchy in my life. I'm not saying that, you know, everybody who takes their father's name or their husband's name is, you know, participating in patriarchy, but that is actually where it stems from. And I just thought, you know, I would like to honor my mother's family, and I would like to not have to correct people all of the time about the pronunciation of my name. It just is distracting. It's stressful. It was anxiety inducing. And I just, you know, got to a point where I was like, you know what, the positives outweigh the negatives. People said, oh, why did you wait this long to do that? And it's like, you know what, you come upon your decisions when you land there. It's not something that I was like waiting until my ninth record to do. I didn't know that I could do that. And because I felt like I couldn't, because I needed to be the version that other people wanted me to be. And that's not who I am. And I thought rather than changing my performing name to Haley McCollum, which is my legal name now, it would be easier to just drop a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just Haley.
And the nice thing about having done 9 records is you can kind of get away with doing the one name thing because people still know who you are.
I hope so. And it's interesting. Several times, at least lately, people have recognized me out in public and said, like, oh, are you Haley Bonner? And I'm like, well, it's actually... And they're like, well, I know you don't go by Haley Bonner anymore. And I'm like, but do you? Because if you knew that, then why are you saying that?
Right, yeah.
You know, but it's just like people are out of habit.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do that and it takes a while and I have to be patient with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and to connect you with your previous work. Sometimes it's a convenient shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It has its own set of frustrations, I imagine. But,
yeah.
but you know, it sounds like a good decision for you. And, yeah, so, and it sounds like you're really, and with this record, too, you're kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to do what I want to do and taking some, I mean, not that you haven't done that in the mm-hmm. past, mm-hmm. but.
Oh, I feel more empowered and more, like, myself than I've ever felt in my life. And I think that's just what happens when you get older and you sort of carve out a life for yourself. And I had a lot of trauma to work through. I've been doing that work in my life for a while. And it's difficult, but it's so worth it because now I just like I have all the agency that I've always wanted. Because I care less about what other people think and more about like what brings me happiness and peace and makes me feel good and everything else, it's just noise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And if you were going to do one more song for us, thank you for doing that. And then we'll talk about the show again. And were you going to do the Daniel Johnston too?
Yeah. So Grandma's Boyfriend plays this song a lot, and we actually put it on our last record, but... Jeremy and I have been playing this on tour, and I think it sort of encapsulates like all of the things we've been talking about. So, yeah, this is one of my favorite songs by Daniel Johnston, I Live My Broken Dreams.
San Marco, you go today. They probably would have put me in a home. So I threw all of my belongings into a garbage bag and out into the wilderness I did roam. My hopes lay scattered like a mirror on the floor. Myself, I look really scattered, but I live my broken dreams. I live my broken dreams. That I ever knew. I had a flat tire down memory lane, but I came back after 5 years and a half. And now I'm just trying to explain. And now I'm here, and here I stand with a thank you.
That is Haley live from Studio A. Well, thanks again for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. You mentioned that there's a piano tonight at Glenshean, so you are going to be able to do a tune or two from your new album, right?
Yeah.
Pleasureland? Great.
Yes.
Well, looking forward to that. Again, that show is tonight at Glenshean, and the doors open at 7, starts at 7:30. Teague Alexi is performing, and it is a benefit for the Minnesota Music Coalition. And there is also dinner and drinks involved in that. Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Emma Gilhausen, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.